Rabbi, so let's begin, let's begin. We're up to page 162, we're up to Pasuk Dalet. Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalet. On page 162. B'chav le'odom im shachem ba'avoisois ahava. With cords of love. Ve'eye lohem, however, ve'eye lohem kim rivei oil alecheihem. I became like a quarreler, someone someone who raises up a yoke upon their cheeks, the at a love oichil, and I gently guide towards him oichil the ability to survive. Now, what does that all mean? That's quite a mouthful. Let's see it with precision. Instead of me pontificating, let me just see exactly what it says inside with the correct words. Pasuk Dalet the Mitzudos David. Okay, the Pasuk Dalet is on page 163. B'chav le'adam. Hashem here is complaining. This is a continuation of the theme of the last 2 days. Hashem is continuing to complain. Hashem is saying, I'm so good to you, and yet, to me, you are evil. You betray me. The more kindness I bestow upon you, the more you distance yourself from me. Okay, you know, it's a certain human nature. We find that people, that when you're good to a person, I guess they feel shamed. They feel there's a subconscious reaction. When the person is good to you and you don't deserve it, you resent it. The person deep down resents. Every person deep down wants to earn his own share, his own keep in this world. That's Chazal tell us, that's what the Ramchal says, that's why Hashem created this world. Why did Hashem create this world? Because if Hashem wants to be good, Hashem wants to be native. Hashem has a desire to create creatures and bestow upon them pleasure. Bestow upon his creatures enjoyment. So what was plan A? To create Olam Haba, and then to create neshamos, and take those neshamos and put them in Olam Haba. And the neshama will have tainuk, will have enjoyment and pleasure. That was plan A. What did Hashem discover about plan A? It wouldn't work. Why would it not work? Because part of the nature of the creature that Hashem wanted to create would be a sense of shame. And if Hashem would create the neshama and put the neshama directly into Gan Eden, the neshama would not have any pleasure because the neshama would feel, I don't deserve this. It's nichla the kisufa. Kisufa means embarrassment. Nechla means food. It's food of shame. The neshama would not be able to derive pleasure from Olam Haba. The tainug, I don't deserve this. When a person feels they do not deserve what they are receiving, even though it may in the beginning be pleasurable to be nene from a handout, but as time passes, a person is overtaken with a sense of guilt. Why do I deserve to have this pleasure when I did not earn my keep? So Hashem says, you're right, the neshama is ultimately not, creating a neshama and creating Olam Haba and putting the neshama directly into Olam Haba would defeat the purpose of Hashem's creation to create men that they have pleasure. So what did Hashem do? Hashem created this wonderful world that we're in today. And this world, there is Hester upon him. Hashem's presence is not obvious. And man here in this world has an opportunity to earn his keep, what Hashem will give him in the next world. So that's what Ramchal explains. That's the whole purpose of Elul Hazeh, Hester upon him, the ability to earn your keep, which teaches us that if a person does not earn his keep, a person has a sense of guilt and shame. And that explains to a very large degree why, subconsciously, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good to us, Hashem, I put you in this world, you know what? I'm going to be good to you in this world also. Hashem is so kind. I put you into this world where there's Hester upon him in order to give you the ability to earn your keep. But you know, I put you here already, so I might as well make life easy for you. And I'll give you blessing, I'll give you parnasa, and I'll give you children, I'll give you all the good that the world has to offer. And Hashem gives us more than what we deserve. And what happens? Deep down inside, we feel guilt. And we feel shame. And we reject it. We don't even realize it. What's happening deep, deep down? We, Hashem, don't give us such. We don't deserve
it's
it.
Almost like God did one more.
In the beginning, it's normal. In the beginning, initially, and then, but initially, and then when you have what you have, you are taken with a sense of guilt. I don't deserve it.
You don't value it as much either.
What?
You don't value it.
When you want more, when your person wants more, that's referring to Mishayesh Le Money Reitzem Masayim is only when you earn the money. If a person works and he earns money, then he has an urge Reitzem Masayim. If a person steals 100 and I want to go steal 200, it's true, it's a sickness. It's a sickness. But ultimately, the person's not going to have any pleasure from it. Ultimately, down the line, after it wears off the effect, the concept of mi sheyesh lo imon eretzim asayim is much, much more true when it comes to earning your keep. You find this by Talmidei Chachamim. You find a person has satisfaction. They learn a mesechta. They go to Daf Yomi. And they learn a mesechta. They just shuffle in and 10 minutes before Ma'ariv, they just hop around a few lines of Gemara. People who really, they really put their heart and soul into it. And they walk away with the satisfaction. Wow. I just really, you know, I just spent the last couple of months, I gave up a lot for this. I gave up a lot of time and things I would ordinarily do. Even I could have made money during this time, and I devoted myself to doing this. And it comes to see them, and sometimes you see the satisfaction that people have is just out of this world. And what do they, how do they react? I now want to learn the whole Seder. I want to learn Shas. Mi sheyesh lo imoneh, reitze mosayim. It's so much more true when a person has a money due to him earning it, honestly earning it. When people get handouts, there's a sense of guilt. So to a very large degree, I believe that subconsciously, that's all part of our problem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into this world. Hashem, we have nisyonos. We're oymed gesundheit. We are oymed in the nisyonos. Where does it come by? Yishman yishurun vayivot. Where does it come from? What's the psychology of vayivot? I think it's because Hashem is so good to us. He gives us more than what we deserve. We deserve it. Don't make any mistake about it. We deserve it. But Hashem, Gesundheit, gives us more than what we deserve. And we have the ability to understand that we do deserve it. Because we earned it. And Hashem is just doing a bonus. But unfortunately, we don't handle it well. And deep down inside, we feel that shame and that guilt. And we say, you know what, Hashem, don't do me any favors. Don't go and put me to shame by giving me handouts, giving me gifts that I don't deserve. I want to earn my own keep. And that causes us to explore, to do things that are not proper. And one thing leads to another until we find ourselves in a place that we do not want to be. Here, Hashem is saying this idea, B'chav le'odam em shochem, I drew you near to me with ropes of man, with cords of love. Let's see the mitzvot. This first part of the pasuk is down on page 163. With ropes of man, soft, pleasant. I've guided the Jewish people in the desert in Mitzrayim with compassion. I didn't take a whip like a horse. How do you tell a horse to move from location A to location B? You take a whip. You take a whip. How do you take a donkey? You take a stick. Animals, there's no rachmanis. You beat them. Hashem was kind. He spoke to us pleasantly through Moshe, through Aaron. This is typical of the parish of Mitzudos. We have poetic repetition. The next words, pasuk on page 164. On the bottom, ve'eyeh lochem hin hagtim berachmonus. I guided them with rachmonus, kmo hacharshim ha-rachmonim. This is an amazing concept. You have a donkey. You have a donkey, you have an ox in the field, and you see that it's having a hard time. It's having a hard time in the sweltering heat pulling the plow. So you know what the master does? He schleps the plow together with the donkey, with the ox. He also picks up the yoke. What? No, it's not. A man and an animal is not climb. Good kasha. That's yes, a really good kasha. Shor v'chamor is climb. No, it's not. It's not a joke. He's saying a very good thing. Why should not be climb? The animal, why should not be climb? It's a very good point. Climb is, what's between ox and a donkey? And a man and a donkey. Moisar odam mina behema oyin. Oyin, there's no difference. Some people will say it's even worse. Right? Hin hag tim brachamonis. The donkey looks, what are you doing here? Right? Hin hag tim brachamonus. Kimoy hachorshim hachrachamonim hamrimim. Look what it says. They lift up the yoke. Meal lichoyei habim on the cheek of the animal. Lichokel mimena koivir hamasah oil to lighten the load. The at elov oichil. At means to tilt, to turn. He learns here, oichel means food. Ochel means food. That's one interpretation. And we'll see other very interesting interpretations. But I give it food. I bring, at means I motu. Motu means I direct. I direct food, which in this context means I go to the trough, I pick up some grain, and I bring it to the animal and say, here, have a snack. Have a snack, have a lunch break. Oichil means food. What's the yud doing there? Since when did you ever find the word ochel with the yud in the middle? Never. You're not going to see that anywhere. This is unique, at least according to the Mitzudos. Kahachashim harachamonim hamatim oichel lufi abehemo be'ish choresh when the plows return to loymar. Hikalti ulam. I made light their yoke v'hispakti deitzarcham, and I provided all of their needs. And what did they do? The next pasuk goes on to say is that they rebelled against me. Let's read, in fact, the next pasuk. Pasuk Hey, Lo Yashuv El Eretz Mitzrayim, the Ashur Hu Malko Ki Me'anu Lo Shuv. Let's see the words inside of the Mitzudos. Lo Yashuv Lo Hayulchem Lo Shuv El Eretz Mitzrayim. Therefore, since I was so good to them, they should have put their confidence in me. Instead, what did they do? When times got difficult, when they sensed that they were under attack by Sancheriv, who did they form alliances with? Who did they look to for support? Egypt to Mitzrayim. They looked to Mitzrayim to support them. The Ashur, that this goes back in a different time of history, and when Egypt was the one that was coming to attack them, or when Nebuchadnezzar, Melch Bavel, I'm getting a little confused, but we'll see the Mitzudos, at different times in history, we look to different nations to be our support. And it's interesting, those same nations that we look to be our support, at one point in time were our arch enemies. And that's part of the chesed that Hashem does, is that all of our, everyone is our, I once heard in rabbi school years ago, the laws of rabbis, they told us that about rabbis, they warned the rabbis in training that, you know, balabatim, you have in a career, when a rav has a career in rabbanis, it's going to happen that he will be at odds with every single balabas in his shul. You have a shul, let's say you have a board of 10 people, you have a membership of 100 people, it's going to happen at some point in time, you're not going to be on the best terms with every single member of the board and every single member of the congregation. So what is the trick of survival? Don't be on bad terms with them at the same time. When you're up, when your contract is up for renewal, the first contract, so A, B, and C, you're not friendly with. And everyone else you're friendly with. Just make sure when your second contract is up for renewal, so by that time, and you're not on good terms with X, Y, and Z, make sure by then you have made peace with A, B, and C. That's the secret of life, you should know, is that the bracha is we're not on bad terms with all of our, with everyone at the same time. Because if we were on bad terms with everyone at the same time, we would not have a chance. That is an amazing kind, it's a hashkacha. It's a hashkacha that we have to always have a falling out with people. That's life. That's what Hashem put us in this world for, to struggle and to deal with other people and try to overcome the problems. But it's a special, extra special siyata d'shmaya, hashkacha pratis, is that it doesn't come upon us all at the same time. Even forget about people with difficulties in life. People, they struggle, all different types of problems, with health issues, with children, with parnasa. What's the bracha? Hashem does not bring all these problems upon a person at the same moment in time. Only when you're dealing with one thing, so then other things in your life are going good. And we're dealing with the other problem, then the other things have by that time have come around and everything is okay. That's a gift. That's a very, very special gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving, gives us the time. Time, it's a gift of time. Zman is the most incredible thing in this world. Kadosh, 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 the third Kadosh in the trial of Kedusha is Le'olam u'le'olmel maya, is the concept of time. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha, a person can sense that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is with him, in that how Hashem uses time to man's advantage when he needs to deal, he comes to this world for purpose. The purpose is to deal with issues. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu spaces those issues that he needs to deal with over a period of over time in order to give him some revach l'hispoinein ben inyin l'inyin. It's an incredible gift. So here you see it over here. Egypt. Egypt, they wanted to destroy us. Egypt is our arch enemy. There's no greater enemy than Egypt. They take the babies and they put them as bricks into the wall. They torture us. And when they chase after us to kill us, I mean, what more do you want? Genocide. There's no greater nation that wants to kill us. And look what's happening now. We're running to Egypt. Egypt, Egypt, come save us. We're going to give you money. We're lobbying Egypt. They're our best friend. Ashur exiled the Aseres HaShvatim. They're the worst of the worst. They disappeared. And yet, and later on, and even before, back and forth, sometimes we're on very good terms. Ad kadei kach, they promise that we're going to take care of you. We're going to be at you. We're going to be at your side.
But you know, your enemy's enemy is your friend.
Right.
And that's what happens. It's always coalitions. Everything is about coalitions.
Okay, it's true. That's true. But it's not always true. It's not always true. Your enemy, that's a true concept, sometimes it's not always like that. Not all the time is your enemy your friend. Sometimes you have enemies and you have friends. And you need your friends to help you. Even though we see in life, it's true. You're right. Your enemy's enemy is your friend. They have these calculated cheshbonos. But it's not always true. Right, that's exactly the point. That's exactly their descendants. We do find in Chazal that sometimes the Egyptians or nations, they look into their history and they say, what are we doing this for? Why are we so good to them? Look what they did to our ancestors. And in fact, the Egyptians did exactly that. The Egyptians, at one point in time when Nebuchadnezzar was coming to attack, the Egyptians were true to their promise. They got into their tanks, into their planes, and they started coming to our assistance. And as they came, they looked at the Mediterranean, and they saw there in the ocean, they saw dead bodies floating. And whether it was or wasn't, they thought that those dead bodies were the dead bodies of their ancestors that drowned at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf. Maybe it was just an image, or maybe it was someone, but it was a reminder, what are we doing now? We're sending our young men, we're spending money and our children to go support the Jews. Look what's floating in the water. Dead bodies. Who are these? Whose dead bodies are these? These skeletons. These skeletons 500 years ago, whatever it was. These are the skeletons of my great, great, great grandfather. I'm now going to save and risk my life and spend my life savings for a person who is responsible for the death of my great-great-grandfather, and they made an about face. So you do see that it's true, they're different Egyptians, but they're still, you know, they're still descendants, they still have a connection. So it's not totally, totally separate. Okay, let's go further. So this is Hashem of Yisrael. Here, let's see the Mitzudos Pasuk Hey, in the Mitzudos on the bottom. Lo Yashuv, Lo Hayolham, Lo Shuv. Hashem is complaining. Why then, when you find yourself in a state of distress, are you putting your support, your confidence in Egypt, and not turning to Hashem? Lo Hayolham, Lo Shuv. He's adding a very critical word in this pasuk, the Mitzudos, when it says Lo Yashuv, add the word Lo Hayolham, two words. Lo Hayolham, Lo Shuv. It was not proper, their behavior, to rely upon man and not rely upon Hashem. El Eretz Mitzrayim, Levakesh Mem Ezra, V'Ashur, Ritzen Loimar, V'chi Ashur Hu Malkoi, Lilchoi Milchamtoi, is Ashur their king? At other times in history, other different events, the Jews put their confidence in Ashur. Is Ashur their king? Who is the king of the Jewish people? Hashem is the king of the Jewish people. Why then are you looking to Ashur for support? They refuse to return to Hashem. They rely upon the king of Ashur. He was their king. So this is the interpretation of Mitzvah. Let's read the Pesukim again inside very quickly. Hashem Elohim is complaining about Klal Yisrael. Hashem is saying, I've been so good to you. I was too good to you. Bechavli Adam Em Shochem. When I guided you in the desert, when I guided you in history, I guided you very delicately. I put upon you the ropes of man. In other words, not like an animal. Like an animal, you put a yoke and rough, coarse ropes, which hurt and pain the animal. I was kind with cords of man, an expression, just an expression. I had manhigim. I selected for the Jewish people leaders that were very good bali midos. They were very kind, very generous. They were very gentle in dealing with you. With cords of love. It's just an expression. Hashem, know what I was like? I was like your master as Rachmanis on the animal. It's working too hard, so the master picks up the yoke and the master pulls the plow. So the animal should not have to work so hard. And I bring food to the animal. I was like Kim Rimeo, like a master, an owner of the animals in the field, a farmer who picks up, he lifts up the yoke al lichayhem above the cheek of the animal so it should not have to work so hard. And I bring the animal food. I've done everything you can possibly do good for you. And therefore, Hashem says, and yet you have betrayed me. You betrayed me when you find yourself in a state of stress. Who do you put your support in? Who do you look for help? To Egypt and to Ashur. Bad mistake. Big, big mistake. Lo yoshuv el eretz Mitzrayim. You should not have looked to Egypt. The Ashur. Who Malkoi? Is Ashur your king? Are they the ones who you rely upon? Ki me'anu loshuv. It seems so. It seems that they're the ones who you rely on because you have refused to return to me, Hashem. Let's see Rashi. Rashi is similar. Pasuk Dalei bechavli Adam hayisi moshchem tamid bechavolim rakim asher yimshech bochem Adam es benoi. I've always guided them with a soft rope, equivalent to what he adds in this metaphor, what a father uses to pull his child. What does that mean? Benoi, a father pulls, you have a leash? Did you ever see someone have a leash around the neck of his child? I don't think so. What?
On a harness. The kid is wearing a harness and they have a leash. Yeah.
On a child?
Yeah, sure.
They put a leash around a child's neck?
Not the neck, but
on the body? Okay, so it seems if you take Rashi literally, you don't see this today. I never saw someone today in modern times put a leash around the body or the neck of their child when they go with him in the street. I've never seen it.
In the car, you harness the kid in the car.
You put in a seatbelt. You put him in a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to say that the seatbelt is the harness. Seatbelt is okay, maybe in a chanami. Okay, so it's such a concept. But it seems that in ancient times, it was not so uncommon to put a leash around the neck of your child. Different times. Okay, they're typically called child abuse. But it seems you go with the kid in the street, you don't want the kid running around, you don't want him getting hurt, you don't want him to do things that should not be done. So you attach a rope. You attach a rope to your child. So today it's a shocking to see such a thing there. You put a guy in jail. But that's what they did. The ropes they use as leashes for their children are not the ropes you use for your animals, for your dog. Your dog has a different type. You don't take a dog leash and put it around your child. It's a much softer and more delicate type of cord you use to attach to your child because he's your child. So Hashem is saying, when I guided you, when I took you in through history, I didn't put around you a cord that you put around a dog or an animal. I put around you the delicate cords that parents would put around their children to make sure they do not get hurt. Kiloimar b'mishichas rachamim. With the guidance of mercy, like a farmer. An ikar is a farmer. Hatayvim, the good ones. There are good farmers and there are bad farmers. Hamrinim ol bidehem, alide livachim. They at times themselves lift up the yoke above the cheek of the animal to make it easy to lighten the burden from the cow that is pulling. Ki kain hayisi imam b'chol sorrow lahakel me'alayhem. At every difficult time in their life, in their history, Hashem is saying it could have been a lot worse. Rachmana Litzlan, we find this very interesting insight into what Rashi over here is saying, is that every sorrow that we have in history, we have to be able to look back and recognize that it really could have been a lot worse. There are so many different stories about the Holocaust, that how there are so many different events where the Holocaust could indeed have been a lot worse. We think, how much worse could have it gotten? 6 million people tortured, incinerated, uprooted, decimated. I mean, it's the horrors that are still coming to light 70 plus years after the Holocaust. We're first discovering new information that just raises our hair on our head. But also, through the 70 years of discovery, we've discovered incredible acts of Hashgacha Pratis, where the Holocaust could have been, Rachmana Litzlan, a lot worse. You know, Hitler was planning to come to America. Okay, he was coming, it could have happened. Alderich HaTeva, he would have, if he wouldn't have made some foolish mistakes, which are just really foolish, he would have arrived in America. And who knows? Who knows what he would have done in America? The technology that he had was way, way ahead of anything else in the world. They're discovering.
Until he threw out the Jewish scientists.
What?
Until he threw out.
But he kept them. A lot of them. No, there were some scientists that they were Jewish. He knew full good and well, and he did not. There were a lot of things coming out to light. There were doctors. There were certain intellectuals that he kept. Obviously, at the end, he would have killed them at the end, but he used them. He used them to his benefit. Okay, again, there are certain technologies that they had. Ad hayom hazeh, we don't know how it worked. There's a certain type of plane, and they designed a certain plane, and there were people breaking their heads backwards to figure out how they did it. And they cannot, for the life of them, figure out how they were able to design. You can go look up these things on YouTube. The technology of the Germans during World War II. Mysteries. There are a lot of videos, and they go through. They show people today, 2018 or maybe 2010, whatever it was. I saw this. They go and they horror in factories with all the best technology they have today, and they have no clue. How did they do this when we cannot do this even today? Big mysteries. Alderich HaTeva could have been a lot worse. And Hashem here is saying, you know what? And that concept, the metaphor being used by Hosea, is compared to a farmer lifting up the yoke over the cheeks of the cow as it's plowing to lighten the load. It could always be a lot worse. And for that, we have to be thankful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never gives us the full measure of Rachman Litzlan, what we deserve. We don't understand how these things work, but we feel we don't deserve anything. Okay, whatever this means, we don't know how anything works, but it could have always been a lot worse. That's also true, it could have been better. Of course, but you have to also appreciate it could have been worse. Look, how close did he come to going to enter Eretz Yisrael? He could have wiped out all, I don't remember all the details anymore. They could have been there in Eretz Yisrael like in a heartbeat. They could have decimated the whole Eretz Yisrael. It would have been.
They said, I heard once that they said, "What's Shachrishan the Sholei Shoes?"
Yeah.
It was the war in Al Alamein took 3 hours.
Wow.
Had they lost, they would have gone into Eretz Yisrael.
And they said that there are a lot of stories about what Klal Yisrael was doing and what they were doing. They were davening their heads off. It was mamish, a real makom of Lech Kinois as Kol Hayudim. I don't remember the details, but the Gedolei Yisrael really, really sensed it was over. It was really going to happen. They were there, they were marching, and if they would have come into Eretz Yisrael, the whole war would have been different. You know, the whole attitude, you know, we don't appreciate. Like I say, we have this the state of Israel. Everyone know the Haredim, the state of Israel. They don't want to say the word Medina as Yisrael. But you know, you got to be blind to realize if the only reason why a Jew in America, anywhere in the world, can lift up their head with pride and has a sense of entitlement and freedom of religion is because there is a state of Israel. Even though, I'm a Haredi and I have issues and I have this and I have that, But the fact that a Jew in the world is a person of respect, is respected, is not a dog, is because, to some degree, I know you'll tell me there are a lot of different things you can say, but al derech ha-teva, which is a very important thing in this world, okay, the world of reality, derech ha-teva, the fact that there is an Eretz Yisrael, it makes a difference, it trickles down the attitude, the mindset of the world. If Eretz Yisrael would have been conquered by the Germans, by the Nazis, forget about the Chorban, the death of the people living in Eretz Yisrael, the mindset, the frame of mind of everyone else, of all Jews in the world, and of the Goyim as well, of the non-Jews, their relationship towards us would have been very different. Would have been very different. If the Germans would have conquered Eretz Yisrael, and then let's say a miracle would have happened, the war would have come to an end. Would there ever be a state of Israel? Who knows? Let's say they would have entered the Eretz Yisrael, they would have done whatever they wanted to do, and then Hashem, the Chastai, would bring about that the Germans were defeated, and the war came to an end. What would be now in Eretz Yisrael? There would be no survivors there. Who would be living in Eretz Yisrael? Would there be a will for Jews, survivors, to emigrate to Eretz Yisrael? Where would they go? They would go to America, they would go to South Africa. Where would they go? Well, how would the United Nations deal with this? Would there be even a drive that there should be a recognition? Who knows? Who knows? We don't know. If you wonder the thing, it could have been a lot worse. We don't realize the chesed of Hashem. And that's the metaphor with these incredible words. Kimrimei oil al lichayhem. Hashem says, you're a para. You're a para. You're pulling a plow. You're suffering. You're the sweltering heat. You're in pain. And the farmer comes, let me help you, cow. Pull up the yoke. I'll pull it for you. And you're hungry, here's some food. And the para survives. In history, we're suffering. It could have been a lot worse. Hashem pulled up the yoke. Hashem gave us some food and we survived. And we have to appreciate that. On the other hand, there's also, no, it's not a good way to live like this. I have a friend, really a relative, and he has a very difficult life. He really does. And every time I talk to him, he always says to me, it could be worse. He always says that to me, it could be worse, it could be worse, it could be worse. He's telling this to me for years. So this year, finally, in Erev Rosh Hashanah, he said it to me, Nochamo. So I said, it's not a way to live. Could be worse, could be worse, could be worse. You have to have something. Yeah, it's true, but it has to be in balance. You have to have something in life. Some type of thing that in life that gives you great satisfaction. Of course it could be worse. But if you have nothing in life that gives you positive satisfaction, and your entire existence is it could be worse, you're in a lot of trouble. That's not a way to live. If your whole existence, I have no satisfaction, there's not one thing during the day, my daily routine, that gives me pleasure, gives me sipuk hanefesh. So how do I walk around in the street every day and keep my head up? It could be worse. It could be worse. Look on the street, go on the bus, look at what people look like, look how people are deformed. Are poor, are handicapped, all these gefer l'chatzaris people have, homeless people. It could be worse. So nu, moda'ani l'fonecha me'lechai v'kayom shechazar tabi nishmas t'bichem l'rabba munasecha. You know something? That attitude may last for maybe a couple of days, couple of weeks. But when it's over after a while, you can't live like that. You have to have something in life that gives you sipuk hanefesh, gives you satisfaction. And then all the problems that you have, those things you can say, gamzu l'toiva, it could be a lot worse. It could be a lot worse. But if everything in life is like that, like you're saying, you have to have balance. You know, it could be better. It could be better. You have to have a certain balance, otherwise you're in trouble as well.
Our lifestyle in the United States is like the 1% all of the world. You know, really top.
That's right.
And yet people are not happy with that 1%. Though they want to be the 0.1%.
It's
they don't want the $1 million house. They want the $2 million.
I don't know. I don't see like that. I don't see people today. I really don't know people today that are suffering because they don't have the $2 million house. The people I see are suffering. Even people who have the $2 million house. Have issues with children, health issues, have very serious things which bother them so much, and they're really serious things, that the $2 million house means nothing to them. They have mamash no yishuv das. So I have a $2 million house. I would give it up in a second. I didn't have this problem. People are all different types of problems people deal with, they struggle with. And they're serious. They're not narishkeits. To find a person today, I don't know people, Baruch Hashem, who they're eating themselves up because they don't have the $2 million house. They have $1 million house. I know what Chazal say. It's a sickness. It's a sickness. But Baruch Hashem, I think the Torah society is not that sick. I don't think there's problems, of course, of crazy things and spending and mishugasim and narishkeit. But the people that go to these crazy, like I know some of the people that go to these hotels on Pesach. Let's talk about the most outrageous experience hotels. A lot of the people there, I know firsthand. I know of people who go there. They're not happy. They go there as an escape. They go there mamish as an escape from dealing with very, very heavy things. Go for 2 weeks, a week, they get away, and it's over the top, and it's crazy. So people don't know the whole story. You're just crazy. You see these people, they send out YouTube, you know, I mean, WhatsApp. Today, the world's a churban today. You know, used to go away to these extravagant places, so no one knows. Now, you just take your phone in 10 seconds, the whole world already sees the mishigas, right? It spreads like fire. The whole world sees what's going on, and the whole world is laughing and making what sun is and doing this and doing that. All right, but you don't know the other side of the story. You don't know there are people that Baruch Hashem, they don't have any problems, they're not the shit, but there are a lot of people that it's frightening. It's really, really frightening what they deal with, what goes through their mind, the daigus and whatever it is. Let's go further. Let's go further over here in this very powerful Rashi over here says, Rashi gives us this metaphor, but it could be a lot worse. L'hokel mi'al ha'parah ha'charesh l'keira yisi imam b'chol tzor v'l'hokel me'alem. Hashem always makes it light for us. Lashon Achen, new interpretation. Kim rimei oil al l'cheihem ko'ikarim ha'toivim ha'merimim ol mi'al tzav ha'shar al yidei Hashem ma'richines ha'kiloinos sh'ho'ol nosim b'roshoi. In order to lift up the pole, the klonos means the pole, that the yoke is inserted into its head, lo hokel mi'ala parachareshes, to lighten the load from the para, kein hayisi imam b'chol tsaro lo hokel me'aleihem. Now how is this different than the first interpretation? The first interpretation says, and the second line, the Rashi, hamirimim ol Bidehem al yidei levachim lohakil me'al ha'par ha'chereshes. And here it says, al yidei she'marichin, they extend es ha'kiloinos, they make it longer, she'ol nosun b'roishoy, the yoke lohakil me'al ha'par ha'chereshes. So the first interpretation, the farmer is actually lifting it up. The second interpretation, he's not lifting it up. Then he's not lifting it up. He's extending it. So what does it mean, extending it? So look over here in the Sifsei Zikanen. He tries to explain the difference because it's very bizarre. What is Rashi here doing between the first Lashon and the second Lashon? In the Sifsei Zikanen, on the right near the Rashi, on the left side, the Perisha region, Havel Lichayhem Lashon Livachim Unesarim. I told you cheeks. That's what the Mitzvah said, but the cheeks. But he learns in the first it means boards. Uleperish hasheni hu l'shoin lechi v'tzavar. It means the cheek. And the Mitzvah said it means the cheek. I did not translate the Rashi in the first parish correctly. The Rashi in the second parish means the word lechi lichehem means the cheek. And therefore, when you're dealing with the yoke, there are beams, there are poles, and there are different parts of the yoke which surround the neck. In the area of the cheek, and in fact, we learned a few days ago that the main part of the harness of the yoke is really opposite the eyes. It comes down over the eyes, right opposite the cheek, goes down from the eyes to the cheek. Then he goes to Rashi's inconsistent, because we're going to see in a few moments, Rashi's going to go back to the first interpretation. A lechi in a mavoi. We know that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to carry even if you make an eruvi chatzeres and a shetufei mevois, you're not allowed to carry unless you close off the fourth wall of the alleyway. How do you close off the fourth wall of the alleyway? With a lechi. What is a lechi? A beam. A lechi is the Mishnah's term for a beam that you position vertically at the edge of the wall, on one side of the wall, in an alleyway, in a three-walled, in a dead end. In an alleyway which has three walls, you're still not allowed to carry there on Shabbos because one end is completely open. You have to have a simon, a heker, and the heker is in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, either a lechi or a koira. So Rashi is going to say in a few moments that when it says here in this pasuk over here, this very bizarre expression, ve'yilchem kimimei oil, I lifted up a yoke, al lichehem, upon their lichehem, the shorish is lechi, it means a beam. I lifted this up on top of the beam. What does that mean? It's very, very, it's very difficult. So in the first, now with that, let's go back. And before we go back to Rashi, look, then he just goes further. Ve'ayin b'magishe mincha mashma hachilik b'na pirushim bo'ifin acher ayin sham. The Siv says, Zekein acknowledges that what I'm telling you in my interpretation may not be correct. There are other interpretations to try to deeply understand, to try to uncover the depth of what Rashi means, the difference between Rashi's first interpretation and Rashi's second interpretation. But according to the Sifsei Zikanin, the way he's trying to analyze the difference between these two interpretations is to say the difference all hinges upon what is the precise translation of the word lichehem. In the first interpretation, it means a beam. In the second interpretation, it means the cheeks, where the yoke is positioned. So let's read the second interpretation, and then we'll go back maybe to the first. One more time, the second interpretation. According to the Sifsei Zikanin, Lashon Acher, it's the last small line in Rashi, four lines down, Kimrimei Ol Al Lichehem, like one lifts up a yoke upon Rashi's second interpretation, his cheeks, according to the Sifsei Zikanin, Ko'i Kodim, like a farmer, Hakadim, Hamanimim, who lifts up oil, a yoke, Mi Al Tzavar Hashar, Al Yidei, how does he lift up the yoke above the neck of the axe? Now notice here also, as well here, he calls it a shor. In the previous interpretation, he called it a para. What's the chilik between a shor and a para? I don't know, it's the same. A shor is a generic term which covers the entire lifespan of an axe from an infant to adulthood. A baby ox is called an egel, and either can be a male or a female, an egla versus an egel. Then when it's the second year, it's called something else, which I don't know, I don't remember. And then when it's in its third year, it gets the term shor. It's called an ox for a male, a par, and it's called a par or a para. When it's an adult, it's called a par for a male and a para for a female. Shor shenogach es hapara. It's highly important in Mishnah. Now, a shor also refers to a male. The words are interchangeable. The word shor, on the one hand, can be a generic term referring to the entire life cycle of an axe. Egel through adulthood of what we call a par, whether it's a female, an egla, or a male, a para. That's a generic word for shor. Shor. Ki yivoleid v'hoya shivas yamim tachas imoy umiyoyim hashmini v'hola yeirotze. There it used the word shor, and it's ki yivoleid. It's not even one day old. What?
It's an egel.
It's an egel. It's not called a shor. So why then does the pasuk use the word shor in axe ki yivoleid? We typically, in our vocabulary, use the word shor to refer to an adult, to a mature axe, not egel. The answer is, the word shor can be a generic term which encompasses the entire life cycle of these creatures, of this creature. However, if you want to be more precise, there's an egel, an egla, the adult is a par and a para, and in the middle is something else. I don't remember what it's called. In the middle is something else. There's another term for when it's 2 years old. And once it becomes 3 years old, it's a par and a para. When it says in the Mishnah, the famous Mishnah in Masechta Bavakama, shor shenogach es hapara, an axe that gores a para. Obviously, if the para is a female axe, which is more than 3 years old, And there in the context, it's pregnant. It's pregnant, so it's an adult. The shor that's goring it is also the same age. Also, there the word shor means an adult.
Because before that, it doesn't have any horns.
Oh, very good. Okay, very good. It has to have any horns. So, a bull. A bull, right. English, right.
Male.
Oh, sorry, so the English translations are not even accurate. Right? The English translations, there's also another big problem which confuses us, because the English translations in the art scroll and the old traditional Svarim, which the art scroll drew from, are highly inaccurate. Right? Nesha. What is a Nesha?
Vulture.
Go ask anyone in the street, they'll tell you it's an eagle.
Vulture.
Can't be an eagle. It is impossible. Right. Impossible for a Nesha to be an eagle.
Why is it impossible?
Because the Gemara says really that an eagle has no kosher simonim. Zero. It is the most unkosher. The Nesha. The Gemara says the Nesha. Those letters, Nun Shin Resh, is the most unkosher bird of all the birds. It is the only bird which has all four simonim of not being a kosher bird. Problem is, an eagle has only three. At least that's right. An eagle does not have the fourth simon. It has an extra finger. It has four fingers. It has three, and then has one. The one that stands out is the sign that it's kosher. In order for a bird to be kosher, it has to have an etzba yisera, an extra finger. The eagle that we know in America, the bald eagle, all the varieties of eagles that we are familiar with, all have an extra finger. Therefore, the eagle cannot be the Nesher, because the Gemara says, the Gemara says that the Nesher does not have an extra finger.
So all of the civil kashrus by a bird is only comes from...
Messiah.
Yeah.
Messiah. But we do, even though we have Messiah, that's the turkey, all the other these exotic birds. But the important point is, it has an Etzba Yisera. So the eagle cannot be the Nesher. So what then is the Nesher? So this has opened up.
Some of the recent writings.
Vulture.
A vulture,
exactly. Or a variety, a certain type of vulture. A specific type of vulture is a more assumed. It's not one of those for sure. Some Mepharshim say the Nesher is a mystical creature, like the unicorn. It's not even a creature that we're familiar with. It's some type of mystical creature.
It's a mystical eagle.
The reason
we say it's an eagle because it's supposed to be the highest flying bird.
But an eagle is not the highest flying bird. The vulture flies higher. Vultures, they are the highest flying birds that we know of. Certain types, you have to know which variety, which species. But nothing is certain. So I just give an example here. When it says, he's asking a very question, ox is not necessarily, when we're talking in the Torah's term, shor, par, para, yeah, it's not, everything's not in effect. But one thing is very curious. Rashi is saying two perushim for this very fascinating concept, and the two perushim seem to be, to us, the same exact thing, and he's using just a few slightly different words, and one of the words, the difference of words between the two perushim is shor verse para. How do you explain that? In the first parish, Rashi says, "Ali de levachim lahakel miyala para hachoydeshes." In Rashi's second interpretation, he says, "Like a farmer, that's good." And notice over here in this second version, the word toivim is not really part of the girsa. The word toivim somehow was put into the brackets. What does that mean? It means that wasn't part of Rashi's original version. And someone came along and added that into Rashi, or it was always there. If you tell me that it was not part of Rashi's original version, maybe that's the difference between the first version and the second version. The first version, we're dealing with a grade A farmer. A farmer who has won awards. He puts on his fruit. We've won all the awards. All the awards. Well, they have these different trade shows. Trade shows. What?
The 4-H blue ribbon.
An Ikar HaToivim. Hashem says, I was like a good farmer who won all the awards. Rashi's second interpretation, he leaves out, at least if we ignore the brackets, HaToivim. Rashi is comparing this. I was like, not the best farmer.
Average.
I was like the average or the below average. Or maybe the black market type of farmer, right? The one that the government doesn't know about. Yeah?
We have a par and a para.
Yeah?
An eagle and an egla. But we don't have a shorah.
A what?
No,
because we don't have
a shor. A shorah. Because a shor exactly
it's
is a generic. It's all encompassing. Correct. Okay.
But yet, it doesn't come as male or female.
Correct. So look at this, the other very curious difference between the two Purusha Rashi. Toivim and not Toivim. And then over here he writes a new idea, Al Yedei Shem Ma'arichin. He extends Es HaKloinos. The Kloinos means the pole. Isn't that the board? The Kloinos is the board. That's the pole which pulls the animal. Ha'oil, the yoke, HaKloinos, She'ha'oil Nosun B'roishoi, Lohakel Me'al HaPara HaChereshes. Now what does that mean exactly? I have no idea what this means. Is there any science that if the pole is longer, that it's easier for the axe to pull the plow? You have an axe, and then you have a plow. How long is the pole between the axe and the plow? Is it 10 feet or is it 5 feet? So if it's 5 feet, I'm asking you, is there any science that if it's 5 feet, it's more difficult? But if it's 10 feet, then it's slightly easier for the axe to pull the plow. Is there such a thing? I don't know.
But technically, let's say you're saying the pole.
Yeah.
But when you plow, the man, the ox is pulling. The man is pushing the plow.
Pushing down.
So maybe he says it picks up, extends.
On the other side.
Oh yeah, the plow he doesn't push.
He's pulling up on the other side. But then if he's doing that, the earth is not, the job is not being accomplished.
So he's compromising.
He's compromising, so you're saying a very possible concept. Hashem is willing to compromise on what he demands of us by lightning, by picking it up.
Yeah.
Or, no, Hashem's not going to compromise on what he demands of us, but instead he'll pull with us. He'll pull with us. Very good. It's a philosophical, very fascinating idea. What exactly is Hashem doing? Over here Hashem is saying these words. I'm making life easy for you. It can be worse. It can be different. It could be different than it was. And Rashi gives a metaphor. Rashi says, referring over here to a creature that's pulling a plow and a farmer is doing something. What is he doing? Rashi gives two interpretations, and it's not clear at all what is the difference between the first interpretation and the second interpretation. And when you think about the metaphor and you apply it to life and world history and Klal Yisrael's role and their purpose of being in this world and being in Orl Amim, it can result in a world of a difference. One little word in Rashi and how he explains the metaphor makes a whole difference in Hashkafa. You may end up being a Sat B'chassid if you learn it one way, and you may end up being a Lubavitcher if you read it the other way. Mo Hashem Elokecha Doresh Me'imach. Right? It's a world of a difference. What is Hashkafa in this world? What do you view your role in this world is to do in this world? It's very big dafkamina. And Rashi is giving over here, just pointing out the point, because I don't know what it means. I try. Over here you write, Shemarichim, you extend a kloinas. It sounds like the type of yoke, you have a choice. When you buy a brand new yoke, it comes in different pieces. So sometimes you have a long pole, sometimes a short pole. Which pole are you going to use? Well, it depends, obviously, on what the function is. But to make it easier in this context, we're using a long pole. And I don't know what he's talking about over here. The Sifsis is a came. I really don't know what he's thinking. That in the second interpretation, when it says the word lichayim, it means a cheek. But in the second interpretation, he is the word kloinos. It seems just the opposite. In the first interpretation, it means a cheek. And in the second interpretation, it means a beam. So I'm not really sure what the Sifzi Zakena means. I really don't know. Hashem, then he goes on to say the same exact thing at the end. I was Kain Hoyisi Mum Bechol Tsara, Lohokel Mealeyem. And now he quotes the Targum, Kain Tirgim Yonis. And it seems that the second interpretation of Rashi fits with the Targum. The Targum is only the second. Ha ki kora tova. The Targum does say the word tova. Okay, he does say a good shepherd. But Rashi did not say the word Toivim. That was not part of the Girsa. That was only added in. Maybe when the Rashi quotes the Targum, he's really going back to the first interpretation. The rapture is very cryptic. We don't know Rashi. Sometimes the Rashi is not as not as words may have been manipulated. May words that may have been lost. Demarech means to extend long. Marech means extension. Today it's Chodesh Iyar. What is Chodesh Iyar? Chodesh Iyar is Bigmatria 200, Oid Iyar, Aleph, Yud, Yud, Resh. 221. 221. What is Erech? Aleph, Reish, Chaf, extension. Erech, Erech Apayim, extension. 221. What's the calendar day today? Today is Yud Ches. Today is Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is always, B'li Yetzim Min HaKlal, even in every single year, it's always on Yud Ches Iyar. So what is Yud Ches? Chai. Iyar is Erech, and Yud Ches is Chai. Lag BaOmer is Chayim Aruchim. It's a day, a skula for Chayim Aruchim. Long life. What is long life? Eitz Chayim Hi L'machazikin Bav V'samachera Me'ushar. Torah is the ultimate skula for Arichas Yomim. Today we celebrate Rashbi. Rashbi represents the extreme, the shleimos of Torah. Torah soy umnasoy. Chas v'shalom shetishokach Torah miYisrael. Rashbi is all about Torah. Sisrei Torah, Rashbi devoted 13 years in the cave, completely immersed in Torah. Torah is the ultimate erech, ultimate bracha for arichas yomim, long life in this world, and chaye ha'olam haba. And look at that, we have over here Rashi, tova. Like a good farmer that's moirech, that extends with bilcho yosa, seemingly with a beam, a long kiloinos, a lechi in Mishnah Masechta Erevin. You put a lechi along the side of the mavui so you can carry on Shabbos. What does that mean exactly? What's going on over here? Lechi also is very, very, very midrashic. A lechi allows you to carry. When on Shabbos, Olam Haba is Yom Shekula Orech. Is there some type of allusion to Shabbos and the ability for you to enjoy Shabbos to its fullest in a Rishus Hayachid? Shabbos is only in a Rishus Hayachid. There's no Shabbos in the Rishus Hayachid because you're limited. You can't limit what you can do. All right, and going back to the next Rashi writes Al Lechayhem L'Shoyim Lechi Shalmavi means Lech Shalmavi. Okay, and then let's just tie back up and go to Rashi's first interpretation. Now that we have more appreciation, let's look back at the Rashi in the beginning of the Rashi again. Rashi says, Koi Korim Hatayvim Hamarimim, Ol Bidehem, they lift up the yoke with their bare hands. Okay, Rashi did not say that expression in the first interpretation. He did not mention your bare hands. Al Yidei Livachim, through Al Yidei Livachim, through Livachim, which also seems to mean through boards. Lahakel, I don't know what that means. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what he means over here. And the last words are Kain Hayisi Imohem Bechot Sara. Kain Hayisi Imohem Bechot Sara. Lohakel Me'alayem. Okay, those last words are exactly the same. Kain Hayisi Imam Bechot Sara. Lohakel Me'alayem. Those are exactly the same words, but the metaphor is a bit different. Okay, we threw out some ideas, and whatever it means. Al va'at, va'at a love oichil. At means to turn. You have in the Gemara very often, Omar Rebbe so and so, in the name of umotuba. The Gemara used the word umotu. They are inclined. Other opinions are inclined to believe that the author of this statement is someone else. So matu means like they turn. Instead of looking at you, they turn to attribute the source of this halacha to another person. So that's the word matu is really a translation of the word va'at. At means hitisi lekoyach lehochil ol hayisurin. Okay, off the charts. This is totally different than Rashi. Also the Mitzudos. It all starts with the word oichil. Let's read one more. V'yonis and tirgim al shem sipek lohem mizaynois ba midbar. It means food. So let's go. Let's explain one more time. Mitzudos, who is drawing from the targum, starts with the word oichil. The word oichil is a very difficult word to translate. There is no precedent for this word. The Mitzudos says, look at the word. What are the three main letters? Aleph, Chaf, Lamed. Those are the three main letters. there happens to be a vav in the middle of the aleph and the chaf and a yud. No, it's a little strange. It's a little strange to add in pair with these letters. Well, you don't really do that when you, especially you're breaking up each one of the shirashim, the three letters of the poyal, pei, ayin, lamed. You're going to break them up from one another with two letters, a vav and a yud. It must be. Doesn't matter. It must be. It means food. Aleph, chaf, lamed means food. If the word oichil means food, then when it says va'at, it means I provide it. At can mean I turn, that word can be manipulated. Many translations, Hashem is saying, I am the provider of food. I provided you with food whenever you needed it. The metaphor here refers to the par is working hard in the field. The master goes out into the barn, gets some straw, gets him a cold drink, a beer, and brings it to the para, and says to the para, take a lunch break, have a beer with some delicious chocolate-covered straw. That's what Hashem says to Klaus, and that's what's the metaphor. The metaphor is, Rashi says, the Targum, I have provided you with the mon in the desert. In a place of nothingness, I provided you with food. Rashi doesn't seem to go for that. Rashi obviously has an issue that the word oichil cannot mean the word food, because there's a vav and a yud in between each of the letters of the shorish, the poal, pei, ayin, lamed, and therefore he says it means the ability to yochol. Yochol means ability. The ability to move forward in life. Yochol, I can, yochol. I'm able to accomplish. Lashon of koil. Koil means everything. Everything you possibly want. Yochol means the future tense. I can have everything. The word yochol really is a borrowed word. It comes from the word koil. Chof lamed. Everything. A baby comes into this world. What is the position of his fist? Everyone knows this chazal, famous chazal. When a baby comes into this world, his fists are clenched. It's very, very important. If the baby's fists are not clenched, it's bad news. Serious problem. Doctors, it's a very, very disturbing sign that there's a problem. The baby, and then adrabah, know what they do then? They open up the hand, they open up, and the doctor puts his hand. It's one of the first things they do. Right, OBGYN?
It's a reflex.
Reflex. The doctor puts their thumb into the baby's hand, and the baby instinctively shuts its hand very tightly on the thumb of the doctor. If the baby doesn't do that, it's a big problem. Right away, the baby's sent off a test. Who knows? Rahman al-Islam. Because that's natural. That's the natural. When a person dies, Rahman al-Islam, his hands are wide open. If someone dies, the hands are closed, then maybe the person is not really dead. The person dies. So what does the Medrash say? That's life. A person comes into this world with an attitude, Yochol, I'm going to conquer this world. I'm going to take with me everything. By the time I finish my time in this world, I'm going to be a billionaire. I'm gonna be the conqueror of this world. Every little creature who comes into this world has that attitude of I'm gonna conquer. And when a person leaves this world, he says, no, what did I take? When it's all over, what did I take from this world? Nothing. Garnish, nothing. He learned Masechta Zvachim, what do you do when you do a kmitza? There are two avodas. There is a zevach and a mincha. When you do a mincha, what do? You put your open hand into a bowl of flour and you close it. You take out a fistful of flour. What do? When you do zrika, you put some blood on your finger and you open your hand. You basically, when you do zrika, you have to. It's not so simple. What I'm saying, but basically, when you do zrika, you're especially the Kohen Gadol. You take blood, you dip blood, and you spurt. You sprinkle. How do you sprinkle? You dip your finger in the blood, and you go like this. You open your hand. What's the chilek? Because a zevach is sacrifice, an animal. What did you do to the animal? You killed it. You shechted it. Death. When a person dies, he opens his hand. What did I take from this world? What's a mincha? Bread. Bread is life. We serve Hashem with mesiras nefesh, our willingness to give up our life for Hashem, and we serve Hashem by staying alive. By staying alive. Two different types of korbanos. Every korban is accompanied by a mincha. Even though we give up our life, Hashem, we're willing. We can't give it up, so we give an animal in exchange. It's as if we've given up our life, but we recognize it's still kedai to live. And therefore, after bringing the zevach, you bring a mincha. Mincha is lechem, bread, you live. How do you bring it? What is the primary avodah? The primary avodah is the kenitza. The kenitza is to close your fist.
But after he closes it, doesn't he release it?
Not necessarily. He puts it into the utensil. He puts it to the klisharis, and then the klisharis is put. They empty the klisharis onto the mizbeach. Okay, you can ask. You can be mafakfek, but there's no such thing as a kenitza by blood. By blood, the only thing is you do the shechita, the blood is mekabel the blood, and then you take the blood, you do the zrika, the ikar kapara. The ikar kapara is when you do the zrika on the mizbeach. The kmitza, the mincha, you must put the kmitza on the mizbeach, absolutely. But there's a new din in mincha that does unique to mincha concept. There's no parallel for is to do a maisa kmitza. And Chazal say maisa kmitza is the hardest avoida in the Beis HaMikdash. To be able to close your fist in the proper way and only take in your fist what you're supposed to take. Because closing your fist is a sign of life. It's not so easy to live. Chazal say it's the hardest thing you do, kmitza, to take, and to just to take what you're supposed to take and wipe off what's on top and wipe off what's on the bottom. That's avoidus kosher shebemigdash. Is it really so difficult? Maybe, yeah. But I think what the Chazal alluding to is, what does it represent, kmitza? Kmitza represents life. It represents what a child does when he comes into this world. He closes his fist. He comes into this world clenched fist. Yeah, close your fist, but don't close all five fingers, only three fingers. And whatever's heaping on the two sides, you don't need that in this world. So make sure you wipe it away. That's a big avoda. A person can do that. A person can only take what he needs and not get carried away and waste his time and pursue luxuries. Too much. Too much. So therefore, Rashi says, don't tell me the word oichil means food. Oichil comes from the word koil, everything. Not just the word koil, it means yochol. Yochol means I can have everything. Can have everything is the healthiest sign of life. The ultimate sign of life. And who gives us that koyach? Hashem. Poseach es yodecha umaspia l'chol chai ratzon. Dr. Friedman, don't worry, we'll list last thing of this last point. What's shown the pasuk? Umaspia l'chol chai ratzon. What is ratzon defined as? Closing your fist. How does Hashem give us that? By Hashem opening his fist. Look at the contradiction. Hashem, the way the pasuk, the oichil, the way we have the ability to have ratzon, the will to accomplish, is symbolized in closing. And how does Hashem give that to us?
With open hand.
Hashem opens his hand. Hashem is poseach es yodecha, so that we can have the ability to close our hand. We will have umaspia, give satisfaction, l'chol chai, every living creature, that the living creature has rotzoin, the will to accomplish, to go on and to live. It's two ends of the extreme. What is the message? I don't know, you have to think about what is the mesh, but look at the opposites, the opposite sides of the coin. The finish of the rational
version. Everything else says shot is day appropriate because Timon supposedly started on Bomer.
Yes.
So tomorrow we
can
today you would learn.
Today means Takashem Bigvaldi. He's saying unbelievable. Hashkocha Pratis, according unbelievable you just said. It's unbelievable Hashkocha Pratis. What he just said, that over here Rashi says, we those with the Rashi, he tisloi koyach lehochel al the ol ha'yisurin. Okay, the Rashi says Hashem gave us the will to live, the oichel yochel. And then the other thing came al shem shesibigulachem mizoynois ba'midbar. The man. When did the man start? Hayoim, chasam sofer. The man began to fall on lag ba'omer. How do you know that? Because it says in Chazal that the ugo shehotziu mimitzrayim, the matzos that they took out of Egypt lasted for 30 days, all the way until Tes Vav Iyar. And then what happened? Vayelchu shloishes yamin bamidbar. And there was no food. There was no food. And they complained, if only we went back to Egypt, we had their cucumbers and we had their meat, al sir ha-basar, and we had water. So Hashem says to Moshe, listen, go tell them, tomorrow the man is going to fall. So and they complained, they hadn't met him until Tezvav. On Tezayin they complained. On Yud Zayin, Hashem said to Moshe, Moshe, tell them that tomorrow on Yud Ches, the man is going to fall. And look at the Hashgach HaPratis. The last thing we're learning today, the time is up, is this exact halacha. Hashem provided man for Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. V'at elav oichil. I provided them man. On Lag BaOmer. Hayoim. It's not for real, ma'am. It's not for real. So Shvi Hashgach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should provide for everyone. We should seize this moment. Shvi HaBaracha for everyone over here and your extended Chaveim and family. Hashem should provide the man. It's not just food. It's everything. It's Lechem and Hashemayim. It's spiritual sustenance. Hashem should give everyone everything that they need, plus a lot more. In Ruchnius and in Gashmius. Okay.